Good evening, everyone.
Folks, why don't you all introduce yourselves? We're a relatively small group tonight.
Okay. This is Dr. Douglas.
Dr. Douglas, where are you from?
Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, everybody else.
This is Dr. Ben Larrabee. I'm from Michigan, but I'm in Arizona. Go Blue.
Hey, Ben. How you doing, Ben? Smart.
Dave Luann Nelson in Homer, Alaska.
Very good.
Dr. Sean Colliari, Dearborn, Michigan.
Michael Elliott, Rocket Dog Dental, very good.
Dr. Ascari, Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Okay.
Don Swoverland, West Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, Mark, why don't you start out?
That sounds good. Sounds like we have a lot of big Ten fans out there. That's what I like to hear. My whole family went to Purdue, and as Ben knows, I'm a Michigan guy, so hopefully the West Lafayette person won't hold that against me. Don't call me a traitor. But my name's Mark McClellan, and I'm on the north side of Chicago, and I'm a practicing orthodontist as well as president of Macro Wealth Management. We're sponsoring the call this evening, and my company primarily works with dentists because I am a dentist. And for those of you who heard the Bill Batcher talk in our first two presentations, this is the third that we've had, and I think you're going to be a real treat if you've not heard him speak before. And we'll have some fun tonight. A little smaller group, probably because of the holidays, but hopefully it'll be quite interactive if we can make it that way. Push 6 for the mute if you don't want to have any background noise, but if you want to come back on the call, push 6 once again. You already know that the topic this evening is called Increasing Case Presentations. And, as you know, as I mentioned, I'm a practicing orthodontist, and I certainly know the importance of an effective case presentation and having folks accept your treatment plan is really the lifeblood of what we do. And Bill, he is also a dentist and has a unique perspective on that because 20 years ago, he was producing over $1 million a year in his practice when crowns were only $300 a piece. So he obviously has a very, very effective way of getting his money. Without further ado, I will pass the baton over to Bill, as long as he can stand all these Big Ten fans on the line. And don't rub in the USC against it. Although we have Illinois in the Rose Bowl, which is something unique for us. But anyway, Bill, it's all yours.
Well, very good. Thank you, Mark. And I appreciate all of you being on this call tonight, given the holidays coming up. And I'm on my cell phone, and so if something goes awry here, somebody else will have to carry on for me. I believe I heard Carol Bogner's voice on the call. Carol, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Very good. You may have to continue if my cell phone goes funny. But what I'd like to do tonight is start out and, you know, by quickly stating that we have roughly 45 minutes here, and I have spent the last 30 years studying sales presentations. How do you have people see the value of what we do in comparison to right now, for example, during the holidays with people going out and buying a 42-inch flat panel for each room in their home? Thinking nothing of spending, you know, the $4,000 or $5,000, no insurance whatsoever, and that's okay. And what we have done for years, of course, in dentistry is we have blamed the patients for having their priorities screwed up. We're going to talk about that tonight. One of the things that I have observed over the years is that as long as we have that conversation, it's their priorities are screwed up, it's their problem. We're looking outside of ourselves for the solution, and of course, that all that leads to is frustration because nothing changes. We see that we present the treatment, they choose to buy the big screen instead of having our treatment, and we, of course, blame the patient. And that's comforting because, you see, it doesn't reflect what we need to change. It doesn't reflect any change that ourselves, the doctor, or the team need to make. And so we can go along our way, and the next patient comes in, we do it the same way, and we get the same results. And again, we blame the patient. And so the frustrating part for me tonight is I only have roughly 45 minutes to talk about this. Mart and his partner asked me to do this. Mart and Tim met with myself in Chicago. I think I was at the midwinter meeting. Said, what can we do to help our clients at Macro Wealth? And when I came up with the idea of, well, let's create some wealth so they can invest it, so they can make a difference for themselves, that we get on a winner. But you see, in the case of accumulating wealth, you really can't do anything unless you raise your income. Because most of us have figured out a way to live up to what our income is. As a matter of fact, we seem to raise our standard of living to match whatever we make. And as long as the increase occurs gradually, there's never any extra money. Now, if you were to talk to people at, say, half the income level that most of you in this call exist at, and you talk to those people who are, say, making $50,000 a year, and if they said if they had 100, my gosh, they could invest 50 a year. But if I talk to dentists, and Mart, you know the same thing, we talk to dentists making 100 and say, how much money do you have left at the end of the year to save or to invest? And the answer is, well, very little. And then if I talk to dentists doing 200 and I say, how much do you have left at the end of the year to invest? The answer is pretty much the same. And so one of the things that I've worked with clients on for years is how to instantly raise the net income. I mean, how do you take a practice from 50 to 100? How do you go from 100 to 200, from 200 to 500, or from 500 to a million? And if you talk to your accountant about this, they will tell you, well, the way to do it is cut your expenses. And all of you know, and by the way, two calls ago, we talked about profitability. And, you know, my conclusion after working with roughly 2,500 dentists over the last 25 years is that most of you have already cut your expenses to the bone, with the exception of most dentists are overstaffed, and that means they're spending more than that magic 20% of their gross on staff. And if you're in that 20% range, which I'd like to see all of our clients basically get to that point within about 90 days, they see that beyond that, there's nothing you can do. I mean, nobody can cut your rent. You can't lower your lab bill. Your supply bill is only 5%. You can't make any difference there. So the only way you can really impact the bottom line of a dental practice, or for that matter, almost any business, is to increase the demand for your services. And that requires more effective communication skills. Interesting enough, Mart, when I first started teaching dentists, you know, I'd speak to a dental society, and they would say, you know, Bill, do whatever you do. You can call it communication skills, but don't mention the sales word, because dentists don't sell.
Right.
And, of course, I said, well, I have evidence of that. I mean, I have evidence that we don't sell, because the American public, the last 10 years, has spent more money on dog food and pet supplies than we spend on dentistry. And so there's your example, we don't sell. The American public spends, and since I mentioned big screen TVs, the American public spends exactly double every year on big screen TVs than they spend on dentistry out of their own pocket. Now, we're talking $70 billion in big screen TVs. The dental industry is $80 billion. But remember, in the dental industry, 50% is covered by insurance. The big screen TVs, none of it is. So we have to look at what we're doing. I guess one of the questions I'd like to start out with and ask our participants tonight is, what prevents you from doing more comprehensive cases? And so I'm asking the question, what prevents you currently from doing more comprehensive cases? Now, I'm going to give you some statistics while you're thinking of your answers. 95% of all the crown and bridge done in this country is done one tooth at a time. And we did the call recently on profitability. We learned that the net per hour by doing two crowns instead of one, and I'm just using that word generically tonight, that raises the net per hour by a factor of three. And yet 95% of all the crown and bridge in this country is done one tooth at a time. And I recently spoke to a group of laboratory owners who confirmed that. And they said, yeah, if you could teach our clients how to do two crowns instead of one, we'd be extremely happy, because our net also triples. So the question is, what factors prevent doctors on the call tonight from doing more comprehensive cases? In other words, what prevents you from doing a case of veneers a week? What prevents you from doing quadrant dentistry? What prevents you from doing full mouth cases? Why do your patients not accept that? So
I'm going to open the, turn the call back over to the participants tonight, and let's have some, hear some ideas. Dr. Douglas, since you were the first one to introduce yourself, go ahead.
If you muted yourself, you have to hit the six button again.
Quick question. Do we have dentists and orthodontists? Is this, what's our...
There's a little bit of both under Ben.
Okay.
Don't all speak at once.
This is Ben speaking. We're doing four-quadrant dentistry right now.
Mm-hmm. So how many teeth in a quadrant, Ben?
Oh, there's lots of fives, sixes, and sevens in there.
Well, it's amazing. We typically refer to it as four, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I understand there are 28 or 32 teeth in the mouth, and we a quadrant is referred to as four teeth. So why is that? But why not full mouth?
It's certainly more efficient to go about it that way. There's just no doubt about
yeah.
it.
Or even presenting and selling full mouth and doing it perhaps, you know, sections or time, but having the patient accept and pay in advance for doing full mouth. What holds us back from doing that?
Yeah, that's a tremendous advantage if you can get the message across that this, it's going to come down the pike, whether you do it all at one time or in bits and pieces. At least you have the patient committed to the process, and you need to do as much as you can when they're there, if not all of it.
Right. Now, my question is, what prevents us from doing that?
Bill?
Yeah, go ahead.
Overland here. In our case, when we started doing the more comprehensive dentistry, it was at the same time that a lot of dental programs took over. So our opportunities, the number of patients dropped down because we don't have any of the programs in our practice. But the big problem, you know, right now is people thinking they don't have money for it. We're kind of trying to create a market here because nobody in this area has ever really presented it to them before.
Yes.
So we overwhelm our patients.
Okay, so very good. So there's a good point. So one of the things that we find is that we are overwhelming patients with the amount. That's a great one. I'll talk about that. What else?
Well, in Michigan, I think right now it's hard because we have such a recession in jobs.
Uh-huh.
And that's deterring our patients from signing on. I mean, we have Care Credit, and it's a great tool to use and to be able to show to our patients. But when you have patients that, you know, their husbands are laid off and, you know, things like that, it's a deterrent to getting a patient to sign up on a large case.
So what is the unemployment rate in Michigan right now?
Oh, I can't tell you the statistics on it, but, I mean, you figure we have the big three here, and they're going down. We're losing, I mean, they're losing jobs daily. They're constantly
Let me talk about
doing
that. Effects. We'll talk about that. You know,
The first, I'm sorry, Bill, not to interrupt, but the one thing that they're cutting the most is the benefits.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that the ones when they cut those benefits, we're going to see our patients less, and they're going to spend less.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a question for you. What are the flat panel screen benefits in Michigan currently?
The flat panel screen benefits?
That 42-inch Sony?
Oh, no, I understand completely. I think that's when I get my patients telling me that they're going on eBay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk about that. What else? That's a good one. The reason I love that one is because back in the late 70s, early 80s, I doubled the size of my practice, and Oregon was second only to Michigan for unemployment. And we had about an 18% unemployment rate, and I think you had a 19% unemployment rate. But here's one of the things I want you to think about. In an 18% unemployment rate, and I do not believe Michigan, and by the way, it's only parts of Michigan, so we have clients currently in Michigan. We have clients up in over in Battle Creek, for example, haven't even felt this at all. I mean, people are still eating cereal every morning. Over in Grand Rapids, people are still buying furniture. So it's only the Detroit area that's really hit the hardest. But
you're right.
Still,
you are right.
It's not all of Michigan. It's areas, and we actually have clients right there in that area also doing well right now. But here's one thing I want you all to think about. You know, you read the newspapers, and one of the things that I find is that they get sucked into this economy story. You know, the economy right now, nationwide, and I understand there are pockets around the country where it's different, but nationwide, we've had the best employment rates for 51 months straight right now. That's 4.5 years. When there's an 18% unemployment rate, there's an 82% employment rate. I want you to think about that. 82% employment rate. And I remember when in Oregon, we're a timber state, or at least we used to be, and we had this 18, 20% unemployment rate, and people would come in and say they couldn't do treatment, and we'd talk about the economy. I'd say, well, tell me, how's it affected you? Are you still working? Yes. Your spouse still working? Yes. Now, it is true there are people that aren't working. There are people that are not working. And there are people, and you read the newspaper, that benefits are being cut and all that sort of thing. But you know what's interesting? People are still buying the big screen TVs. People are still buying furniture. People are still going on trips. And one of the things that I find is that when the economy is excellent, anything works. You know, selling dentistry when the economy is great is the same thing that a couple of years ago, you know, I had dentists coming to me, and, you know, we have a coaching program, and people enroll in our coaching program, and we can typically increase somebody's net $100,000 to $150,000 in the first 12 months we work with them. And one of the things that we found a couple years ago, and you all remember this is back around 2000, the stock market was doing so well, doctors were telling me, oh, I'm doing great in the stock market, I'm probably going to quit practicing in a couple of years, I'm doing as much as a day trader as I am in dentistry. And you know, the interesting thing is, they actually thought they were smart. They actually thought the reason they were doing well in the stock market was because they had some inside track, and their barber gave them a tip or something. Well, then all of a sudden the stock market turned, and of course I didn't hear from those doctors for a while. Well, then the same thing occurs in the real estate market. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many doctors told me within, say, as recently as 2 years ago, they're investing in real estate, because as you know, real estate always goes up. Uh-huh. Well, for those who've been around a little while, we can say that real estate always goes up until it goes down. Well, it's the same thing in selling dentistry. When the economy is wonderful, anybody can do it. When there's tons of money out there, anybody can be successful. But when the economy gets a little tight, or when the papers keep telling us it's getting tight, that's when our true metal starts to show. I mean, that's when you can do the best, because it's just a matter, you have to test your ability a little bit. And here's one of the questions that I would ask. With all of you that are talking about the economy, what have you done about it? How many sales courses have you and your team taken since you started reading the economy was going to get tough? Are you reading a book a month as a team? Are you taking sales courses? Have you changed anything you're doing? And it's really interesting, what I find is that most people, and I'm guilty of it myself, I would love the results to change in various parts of my life, but I'd like to keep on doing things the way I've always done it. And that's a question I would ask. You know, if you're struggling with the economy or struggling to decrease in demand, I'd say, well, what have you done differently? And if the answer is the same as my answer is very often, and the answer comes up, gee, I haven't changed anything, I'm still doing the same things I always did. And I think it was Huxley who said that's one person's definition of insanity, is continue doing the same thing and expect the results to change. Well, here, we keep doing the same thing, the conditions change, but we keep doing the same thing. And it's interesting that we do. So how do we get around that? So I think those are some of the things to look at. There's a huge discrepancy in most practices, and for that matter, most businesses. As a matter of fact, since you've brought up the auto industry, and we have several of you from the Detroit area, it's a great example, and I use it. In my Blatchford Files, I did a CD on this just recently, and it's called Capacity versus Demand. Ford and Chrysler and GM certainly has more capacity to build cars than they have demand for their cars. The pretty basic business equation. Most dentists have more capacity to produce than they have demand. And yet when I say, okay, what have you done to increase demand? Well, the best answer I get is I joined a couple plans. Now, here's one thing I want you to think about. And I'm glad, since Carol Bogner introduced herself on the call, she is our enrollment consultant in the Midwest. And she's talking to a doctor currently, that has, obviously, he is
the way to market the practice is to join a number of plans. So he's truly spending, and he doesn't see it quite this way, but I see it very clearly. He is spending over $200,000 a year on marketing. Now, Michael Elliott is on this call from Rocket Dog Dental, and Michael does a little different method of marketing. Michael creates print, media, websites, that sort of thing for doctors. But this doctor is spending his $200,000 by reducing his fees so certain insurance companies will send patients to him. But he's spending over $200,000. He had $800,000 in production last year, but only collected about $550,000 because he's writing off about $200,000 to $250,000. So he is spending money to increase demand. The only problem is he's increasing demand of patients that only want to come in and do what their insurance company will pay for. Now, this to me is an interesting concept when you think about it this way. Because I'm spending, in this doctor's case, he is spending over $200,000 advertising that his level of service is okay to cut his fees so that he will fit into insurance company plans, and then he would be surprised to find out when those patients arrive in the office, they only do what the insurance company pays. Why would you be surprised? It's the same thing as this Michael went out and put an ad on local television and said, we'll reduce our fees, you come in and we'll do one crown at a time at two-thirds normal price. Who would come in to see him? People that wanted crowns, one crown at a time, at two-thirds normal price. So there are a lot of ways to increase demand. But tonight, I'd like to spend a little time on the case presentation side. And we talked about in our last call, but just for review, most presentation has been done based on need. And I still talk to doctors and staff who are trying to educate their patients into submission. Well, since I used the big screen TVs earlier, people do not buy big screen TVs because they're educated. Why do they buy a big screen TV? I mean, why would anybody buy, get rid of their old television and buy a 42-inch Sony Bravia, for example? Anybody, answer the question.
That's what they want.
That's what they want. Well, no, come on. They want it. They already have a TV marked. Do they need a 42-inch flat panel?
No.
Not at all. They don't need it, and yet they're willing to spend money. I was reading an article.
Crow, crow when people come over your house.
Exactly.
Exactly what they want.
You see, it's an emotional decision, isn't it? What we could do, you see, when people come over to your house, just move the chairs closer to the old set. And you've accomplished exactly the same thing. As a matter of fact, move the chair right up within 2 feet of the set. How big is the screen? Huge, isn't it? Like a wall size.
Yep.
It's so simple. Move the chair closer. But yet, see, people will buy things they want. People, they see an emotional benefit for that. It's not because they need it. It's not because Sony has spent a lot of money and time trying to educate us about TVs. It's not about education. It's about uncovering the emotional needs of the buyer. And I talk to staff members all the time. And by the way, my whole approach is that doctors should spend almost no time talking to patients about treatment. This is a team exercise. This is something the team can do. My example is, and since you folks, several of you from Michigan, you know, Mr. Ford, yes, he's done a few TV commercials, but when's the last time he really sold a car?
Never.
Never.
Probably never.
And yet Ford keeps selling. Somebody's selling them. Who sells them all?
His staff.
The team, you know, all those salespeople all across the United States. But you see, in dentistry, we have it in our heads that the dentist must be the one to present the treatment, talk about the money, all that sort of thing, like nobody else can do it. And yet we're the least qualified to do it because we start talking technical things instead of the emotional things. You have to get outside of the dental brain and talk to people on an emotional basis. We have 4 days of seminar on our coaching program. And we spend three of those training the team how to sell the treatment. And our clients
report to us on a regular basis that they walk into the room and the case is sold, the patient has already discussed the finances, and now the question is, doctor, can you do this treatment? Is this treatment available in this office? That's all we need you for. But we can't do that if the team is not trained. And I look at what I look at most teams and how much effort has been spent on increasing demand. How much energy, and this is a question for all of you to ask yourself, how much energy, how much time, how much resources have you devoted to increasing demand for your services? And what I see is most dentists are spending their time increasing the capacity. And in most cases, the capacity already exceeds the demand. So our approach is to, how do you increase the demand? Well, several things. And a doctor from Indiana, Soverland, mentioned increasing demand, getting more patients in the door that want this type of dentistry. And that's the first key. Here's another interesting fact about that, and one of the things that we do with our clients is we have them do a spreadsheet, set up an Excel spreadsheet in all of your patients, and what you do is you find that you make 80% of your net on 20% of your patients, and you start to study the characteristics of those patients. And one of the things that you will find, it's not recall patients, it's new patients. And here's something else I find interesting, is that your new patient was somebody else's patient. And your current patients will go to someone else's practice, and they'll be new patients, and they'll have to do a lot of dentistry. Now, why is that? That's because we, doctors and teams, don't present ideal treatment to our recall patients. So we increase the demand. If we start a marketing program, we're trying to get people in not based on discounts, but based on value. And then we start to work with the team on how to sell the treatment. And we teach, and I'll give you some questions tonight, but, you know, we don't have enough time to give you several days of training here, but you've got to involve the patient's right brain. You have to involve the patient emotionally. It's not a lecture about dentistry. It's not a lecture about their teeth. It's not a presentation of findings. It's not technical. As a matter of fact, that's why the team can generally do a better job than the dentist. You put two dentists in a room and do a role play and say, okay, I want you to avoid talking about dentistry. Does anybody on this call know how long two dentists can talk without talking about teeth? Yeah, you're all laughing. It's measured in seconds. That's exactly right. If I put two dentists together in a role play, which is one of the things that we do at our seminars, first off, I always think it's interesting that we have 125, 150 people in a room, and I'll say, everybody find somebody you don't know. And so all of a sudden, there'll be 25 doctors and 100 staff members, and 100 staff members find a partner within seconds, and the doctors are wandering around the room looking for a partner. Of course, at that point, I pick up the microphone, and I says, I think I understand why you guys had trouble finding new patients. But then they get together as a dentist, and they start talking teeth immediately. And the staff do what we teach. They start teaching about, you know, they start developing relationship, asking questions, questions like, how can I help you? You know, very simple things. How can I help you? And how long has that been a problem for you? And how's it affected you? What have you tried so far? How's that worked? And what else have you tried? And how's that worked, et cetera? And how would your life be if we could change this? And get the patient talking, get them talking about how life will be, how wretched and miserable their life is the way it is, and how wonderful it will be with this new, whether it's a new television, a new car, a trip, or new teeth. They get their imagination going, and then we talk about budget and ask them what they'd like to do next. I mean, it's a real simple progression, but there's a series of questions that you go through, and each of those seven or eight questions I just mentioned to you may have 10 or a dozen variations which everyone needs to learn, and they have to be in your own words, but they have to be those seven or eight questions. And you go through that with patients, and notice no dentistry is talked about. But we talk in benefits. We talk in what the patient wants. We just listen, and we find that we're talking. talking maybe 10 or 20% of the time, and the patient's doing the rest of the talking, and we're just listening. And this is why it's so critical that team members get good at this, because it can sometimes be time-consuming. Doctors don't have time, and by the way, you don't have time. I mean, your little assembly line that produces income only works when your hands are in a patient's mouth. So when you're staying there, spending time talking with patients, the little assembly line stops. And so you get your team trained to do this sort of thing, and you start to find out what the patients want and what their priorities are, and then you learn how to, the team learns to deal with money. And I don't know where this developed in dentistry, but it's an absolute myth that doctors should not talk about money. I mean, if you went into any store and had a conversation going with one of the salespeople, and then you said, how much is this item? And you said, gee, I don't know, I'll have to talk to my supervisor. What would be the impression? I mean, it would be disbelief, distrust. What's going on here? And yet in dentistry, there are a number of people out there that say that dentists should never talk treatment. And I think, why not? Or never talk money. Why not? I think definitely you should talk money. You went to buy a home, you visit a realtor's office, and within minutes, very few minutes, what's the first question? What's one of the questions they ask you?
What's your price range?
What's your price range?
How much are you pre-approved for?
How much are you pre-approved for? That's right. And are you embarrassed by those questions?
No.
And the answer is, of course not. And yet, you see, in dentistry, we sweep that under the counter, we sweep it under the carpet. We ignore that. We avoid that. And when the question comes up as a direct question to the patient, I mean, there are people out there that are still telling you that you should, doctors should never discuss money. Oh, you'll have to talk to my office manager about that. I haven't a clue. You know, the tooth fairy stops by here every 6 months, drops off our new fee schedule, and I really don't know. I only do six things, but I don't know the fees to them. So, you see, we have to learn to discuss money comfortably. We have to learn to discuss money on a comfortable basis, because we believe in our product, we believe in our service, and it's an absolute bargain. And part of sales is confidence. Henry Ford, another one of your Detroit people that you're all familiar with, said that a sale takes place when there's a transfer of enthusiasm. And he knew this. I mean, he was selling cars. I mean, if you look at the economy of the country, back when he started selling Model T Fords, what was the economy doing? It wasn't that great. There were 2,000 people out there building automobiles, and Henry Ford had to set up an assembly line. Why was that?
He got the cost down.
He got the cost down? What else? But there were cheaper cars than his, too. He could sell them, is the answer. He could sell his cars. You see, prior to Bill Gates arriving on the scene, Henry Ford is probably the greatest salesman this country's ever seen. But he said a sale only takes place when there's a transfer of enthusiasm. And one of the things that I would advise all of you to evaluate is the enthusiasm that you and your individual team members express for the dentistry that you do. You see, I believe and have demonstrated that if there's enthusiasm for treatment, patients will buy. If there's no enthusiasm for the treatment, people won't buy. And I'm guilty, as many dentists are, of walking into my hygiene room, for example, on a recall visit, and my hygienist is talking to the patient about treatment. And if I'm tired and kind of worn down a little bit, I'll say, oh, it's a good idea, but it can probably wait another 6 months or a year. Well, what are we going to watch it do in the next 6 months? Let's put a watch on that tooth. What are you going to watch it do? And you see, the hygienist was full of enthusiasm for treatment. We walk in there with a big bucket of cold water and throw on that one. Does that work? You see, we have to become very enthusiastic about it. You know, one of the things that we have studied extensively in our coaching program is we have studied times off since a vacation compared to treatment presented. And one of the things that we've done is we have graphed, and if you can visualize a graph of the upper right-hand quadrant of the graph, where the amount of dentistry presented, and we'll use U.S. dollars as the measure, as a standard of measurement there, on the vertical axis. And if we measure days of the week on the horizontal, one of the things that we have found is a dramatic drop after about 3.5 days of the dentistry being presented. Now, if the dentistry presented, there is at least a possibility it would be accepted. If the dentistry is not presented, there's an extremely slim chance it will be accepted. I mean, it really slim. I mean, basically none. We've also graphed, on that same graph, diagnosis per day on the vertical, and we have graphed number of weeks since a vacation. Now, I don't mean a dental course. I mean a vacation. This is out of the office, office closed, doctor out of the office for a full week. And we have graphed that against, again, diagnosis per day, and we've seen a dramatic drop between 6 and 8 weeks. So another thing that most of our clients do is they take about 8 weeks vacation a year, because we have learned that if we space the time off throughout the year, nobody gets tired. And you see, for you, since we, some of you were talking football and we started the call, Vince Lombardi, one of our greatest football coaches, said that fatigue makes cowards out of us all. And when we're tired and worn out, we become cowards. Cowards as in our confrontational tolerance drops. In other words, I'm not willing to suggest treatment because, oh my gosh, what if they say no to me? How will I feel? So it's easier to say, let's put a watch on it. So one of the things that we've really disproved, that days in the office is a factor of income, and we've actually proven over the years that the doctors who spend less days in the office generally outperform those who spend more. And if you've read our book, Playing Your A-Game, and if you've not read the book, Playing Your A-Game, get on our website, blatchford.com, and get a copy of it, because we compared 23 offices. Interesting fact. The highest producers in that book are working 3 to 3.5 days a week. And that's a real shock for most people to find out that working more hours does not produce more income. And you see, that goes back to the old capacity versus demand equation again. By working more days, does it increase demand? No. It does increase your capacity, I suppose, to do dentistry. But I think our most productive doctor in the book, year before last, broke $3 million working 3.5 days a week with about eight weeks vacation. So if a doctor, a single GP, can do that, of course, your orthodontist make way more than that, of course. But the GPs, the $3 million mark is being approached and passed by some doctors, and they're not working 4 and 5 days a week. They're working somewhere around 135, 140 days a year. And that's because they have increased demand for their dentistry that matches their capacity. So it's all done with getting the patient involved emotionally and presenting the fee as a matter of fact, this is what it is. And when the patient says the same things they generally say, my gosh, that's a lot of money, instead of dodging the bullet and saying, oh my gosh, that means they don't want anything, you say, "What exactly what does that mean?" Again, you go back to asking questions. You don't make assumptions. Does that mean, yes, it's a lot of money and you want to go ahead? Or, yes, it's a lot of money and there's no way in the world? Or, yes, it's a lot of money and you'd like to make payments? And you see, you don't just drop it when the patient brings up money. So it's training, it's practice, and it's changing the paradigm or the way of thinking about sales. And it's a matter of spending the energy and the resources to train the staff how to become good salespeople. And as the economy gets tighter, and by the way, our economy did grow last year at, 4.9%, the biggest growth in 7 or 8 years. So understanding there are local areas where the economy is suffering, but again, I'm not willing to use that as a reason for dentistry not doing well. And by the way, this year, dentistry will exceed considerably
what we did last year. I mean, I saw the statistics about September, which were for the first half of the year, and we were well ahead of where we were last year at that time. So it's easy to allow the team and the doctor to get sucked into this thing about the economy, but really the question is, what have you done differently? So what are some questions some of you have? More specific. Go ahead.
This is Dr. Asari. I have a question.
Yes.
You mentioned about, and I certainly do believe that, you know, when you are marketing to, instead of signing up with different kind of plans and taking insurance adjustments, et cetera, you're just working harder, not smarter. But when I talk to other peers about it who might not be doing the same, one thing that comes up is, well, you're going to get a lot of referrals. You're going to get a lot of cash patients who might not be of the same plan, but you're going to get the word of mouth out. You can still practice the same standard of dentistry and better dentistry, but then you're going to get a lot of cash patients too, and people who might not be belonging to the plan. So what is the impact of basically getting the word of mouth and getting cash patients by taking a hit when you do sign up with insurance plans?
Well, here's the question. First off, it's an extremely difficult question to answer. It's a very broad question. When you accept plans, and I'm not opposed to plans, I just say that you just have to recognize that you're spending, for example, in the example I gave you, the doctor is spending about $200,000 a year in discounted dentistry to get those people in the door. What my suggestion is you need to weigh that against what $200,000 in marketing could bring into a practice. That's a lot of money. And again, it depends on your locality. It depends on your community. It depends on a lot of different things. But $200,000 will go a long ways in most communities to market a dental practice. And one of the things that we teach is that, first off, you have to know what it is that you do. You know, who are we, what do we do, and for whom do we do it? My wife and I just happened to be on vacation, and we ran into a friend that had gone to grade school with our children. And he has worked in the R&D and the marketing division for several companies. Some of you will recognize some of these companies. Out of college, he started with Gyro, who makes bicycle helmets. Then he went to a company in Beaverton, Oregon called Nike. He now is with Black Diamond Equipment, and they make high-end climbing, backcountry ski equipment, that sort of thing. He's been with them for a number of years. And you see, one of the things that they understand, every one of those companies understands who they are, what do they do, and who is their target market. And they all spend a considerable amount of money marketing those products. Now, the company he's currently with is Black Diamond, and if any of you are outdoor people or familiar with a man named Yvon Chouinard, who started a company called Patagonia. And Black Diamond was their climbing company. But you see, they are very clear what they're trying to market. And one of the things that I see with dentists is the first thing you need to do is you have to answer those questions for yourself. What do we do, and who's our target market? Now, if you go with a plan, you have to remember you're marketing to those people that see the value in a discount. They see the value in discounted dentistry, and therefore they're coming to your office. Now, if that's your plan, and by the way, I'm not saying A or nay or good or bad. I'm just saying you have to recognize who you're marketing to. That's very similar to putting an ad in the paper saying we offer a 20 or a 30 or 40% discount in all dentistry that we do. And you will get people that come in expecting the discount. The other businesses that market their services and their goods at a higher end, and people come in because of value. It's really interesting. There are certain areas where we all shop for value. There are other areas that we all shop because we want absolutely the best quality available.
interestingly enough, when I go to buy something that's best value, I may go to a different store than if I go to something for absolute great quality. For example, if I were going to buy paper towels, perhaps I go to Costco. If I'm going to buy a suit to speak at the midwinter meeting, I wouldn't buy my suit at Costco. If I went into Costco, I'd probably be surprised to find a high-quality suit. And I think we bring patients into a practice by joining plans, and then we're surprised when they don't accept high-quality treatment at higher fees. So I think it's a decision you have to make. How much am I willing to spend? Do I want to spend attracting patients that want a discount, or do I want to spend the same amount of money on people that want quality? Your choice. And it's not a right or wrong answer. But don't be surprised when the people that come in looking for value, looking for discount fees, don't accept high quality treatment at standard fees. Don't be surprised. That's what you asked for. That's the message you're sending out to the community. So I think the insurance companies have played on that very successfully as a ploy. Say, look, well, it's better to have a patient at a lower fee than no patient at all. Well, I personally have done the math for a lot of dentists, and I find that I'd rather take a day off. I'd rather have a smaller team and not have to support a team to deal with all those people that want to discount dentistry. Because remember, that in the same example that we're using of this doctor who writes off $200,000 a year, that $200,000 comes right off his bottom line. He has paid the expenses on $800,000 worth of production, paid the staff, paid the lab, paid the supplies, paid the rent, on and on and on, and takes $200,000 less in fees. Where does that money come from?
Oh, certainly his pocket.
That comes right out of his bank account, doesn't it?
Right.
And so, to answer your question, it's a question you have to ask for yourself. One of the things I help doctors do is I ask a lot of questions to get you to decide which way to go. I mean, and it doesn't, I have no agenda. It doesn't matter to me. If you can figure out how to do discount dentistry very efficiently, very, very efficiently, then you can make money on it. But you can't make dentistry, can't make money doing discount dentistry when you're paying laboratory fee, or excuse me, staff fees, for example, 30% of your gross. Can't happen. Now, if you're down 15 to 20%, which I believe is, I know I've proven over and over again, is very possible, then you can make money on discount dentistry. So it's really a question for you to decide which is best for you. It's not a pat answer. And that's one thing I pride myself on, is that I do not have an agenda with my clients to tell them how to practice. My job is to find out how you want to practice and help you become effective in whatever method that is. And I have clients that are strictly insurance, and I have others that haven't dealt with an insurance company in years. And I have, and sometimes I have them in the same city, sometimes in the same building, and both do well. It's a different niche, and I'm not judgmental about it.
I see. Your Thank
choice.
You.
Hey, Bill, other questions? Like... Long answer, wasn't it?
Yes.
Other questions?
Well, Bob, a comment. This is Mark speaking again. I love the whole concept of enthusiasm. Being an orthodontist, many times a little girl, a little boy will come to the office, and they'll come in the consultation room and say, well, we're not quite sure why we're here. We're just here because our dentist told us to come here, and we don't know why we're here for. And if you can be enthusiastic about what you can do for that little child, they'll sign up right there and then and go out and get the records, and away you go. Whereas they go in not understanding exactly what they wanted. But if you're enthusiastic, that is a huge, huge plus in front of your clientele.
And you see, it doesn't matter how you're going to treat it, does it, Mark?
No.
They just want to know that they're going to have nice straight teeth, they're going to have a good-looking smile and be popular again. That's all.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any how you're going to, which bracket you're going to use or all that sort of thing, and we know what fees are. Well, here's some questions that I hear all the time. You know, how do you take that patient with one broken tooth, and how do you convert to two or three or quadrant, or how do you bring up full mouth? And, you know, really, again, it's getting the patient, the answer is it's getting the patient thinking about long-term goals, not immediate. You see, anytime you go long-term, the barriers go away if you get people thinking long-term. So those are some of the questions I hear. How do you get your team? Another question I hear is, how do you get team involved in presentation? How do you get your team to talk about money? And part of it is that you let them know what your expectations are, and some will, some won't. And, you know, the question I always ask is, if you ever shop at a Nordstrom, I say, how many people work at Nordstrom that don't sell? And, of course, the answer is nobody very long. And so here's one of the things that I find in dentistry. A lot of it is team selection, selecting those people who have the clinical skills but can also have the communication skills. And while you're going to all tell me it's difficult, but at the same time, if it were easy, everybody would be doing it. But there are good people out there that have the ability to learn the communication skills. And one of the concepts we teach in our coaching program is that life is all about behavior. It's not about how you were raised or how you were toilet trained or not trained or how you were educated or whether you were Baptist or Catholic or whether, you know, any of that stuff. It matters how you choose to behave. And it's the same with team members. It's how they choose to behave. And unless someone has a gun to their head, you see, behavior is always a choice. And so when a team member says, well, I'm just not outgoing, or I'm not a good listener, my response is generally, I choose not to be a good listener. I choose to behave like I'm not outgoing. I choose to behave in certain ways. Well, this is, as an employer, this is one of the toughest things you have to deal with, and it's one of the things we help clients with, is when an employee, that is a team member, chooses not to behave in the matter of a good salesperson. They choose not to behave that way. Then you, as the employer, have to make a choice. Because, you see, it's not just who I am or how I am, it's how I choose to behave. And you see, just for an example, just walking down the street, you get to choose every single moment as you meet people. Do I say good morning, or do I choose to behave like I'm not around? Do I choose to act like I'm asleep? Do I choose to ignore them? Either I choose to behave like I'm ignoring them, or I choose to behave like I'm friendly and outgoing. It's all a matter of choice. And so those are questions I get a lot from doctors is, well, how do I get my team involved? You explain what the expectations are, what behavior is acceptable, and then they get to choose whether they want to be on your team or not. And I think that's a concept that once you can grasp that one, can absolutely change a practice or basically any business. When you really understand that team members are choosing their behavior, and your choice is whether you want to continue to have that behavior in your practice or not. And that's one of the biggest things we work with doctors on, is the leadership. Well, Mark, do you have any questions or comments?
Well, I'd one comment for sure, since this is the third of our three-part series. I want to thank you for everything you've done for my clients. Bill, you know, I've spoken about your philosophy of working smarter, not harder, and certainly when you do that with your clients, that enables them to have more money that we can use and invest and do what we need to do to help them get their promised land down the road, and hopefully 5 years.
Well, that's right, and you know, as I said when I started the call, there are only a couple times in our life that we can do any real significant changes in our financial situation, and one of them is when you have a significant increase in income. And that's one of the things that we do. And Mark has given me permission to have our people call you once. We're not going to bother you. We're not going to bug you about this. And because we've learned a long time ago, we do not bother people. But if one of our people calls you, at least return the call, whether you're interested or not. If you're not interested, just say you're not interested. And if you're interested, set up a time, and one of our consultants will spend some time with you and see if there's potential in your practice to increase income. But like I say, our track record is that we increase people's net income about $150,000 the first year we work with them. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, return the call. Mart, I want to thank you. I want to thank Michael Elliott from Rocket Dog for helping put this call together tonight. And if you folks are looking for increase your spend, give Michael a call. I want to thank Care Credit, who helps me do these things if you're looking for patient financing.
And also, too, Bill, you and I are both speaking at the Midwinter meeting this year.
Well, that's right. I'll see you at the Midwinter. I'm speaking there three times. But in the meantime, I want all of you have a wonderful Christmas and holidays, New Year, and hope your favorite football teams win.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.